From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, one physician argues primary care docs need to be a part of Michigan's vaccination plan.
We should still do 1,000 people a day in a high school parking lot for those people that can navigate the system, but we shouldn't leave behind those people that can't get it that way.
Also, some advice for adults trying to help kids through the mental health challenges of this moment.
Basically, what's been happening is that families have been put in kind of a pressure cooker, because all of the things are happening in the context of the family, you know, like school, work, social interactions, all of the emotions, and it's hard to get a break from one another.
And one family talks to us about starting a podcast during the pandemic.
I had to think of a podcast like that I could do on my own, and then my mom came up with the idea of like a reading podcast, and that's how I like started this podcast, kind of.
Those stories coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Later on the show today, we'll talk about the mental health of Michigan's kids. Some are still doing school from home. Some are just returning to the classroom. Still others have been in school this whole time. We'll talk about how adults can make the path easier for kids in their lives. But first, at this point, most, if not all of us, know somebody who's been vaccinated against COVID-19. Maybe you're fortunate enough to be one of those people who's received at least a first dose. Perhaps you got it in a drive-through vaccination site organized by your county or a hospital, or maybe through an appointment at a pharmacy. What you didn't do was get your vaccination the way most of us do for an annual flu shot or a booster of some sort through a general practitioner. That's because family doctors are not yet included on the pipeline of vaccine administration. Dr. Bobby Mukamala is president of the Michigan State Medical Society and a physician. Dr. Mukamala, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Can you start out by telling me a little bit about your practice?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an ear, nose, and throat physician here in my hometown of Flint, Michigan. And I share an office with my wife, Nita, who's an OBGYN, and have been in practice now for about 20 years here.
I don't know if you would normally be in a position to offer folks vaccinations. Is that something that ear, nose, and throat doctors do these days?
Not at all, but I have vaccinated probably close to 1,000 people myself for COVID, just volunteering through the local health department. But yes, it's not something that I would usually do in my office, no. My wife, on the other hand, being an OBGYN, does do that for her patients.
How many times a week do you hear from someone who's coming to your practice for any reason, can you get me connected with someone who can help me get the vaccine?
You know, it's interesting. I get that request probably a couple times a day, but not through my practice, but more through my sort of social media presence, just because people know I've been volunteering with the local health department. They see other people post, you know, pictures of themselves getting vaccinated by me. And then they say, hey, you know, I saw you were vaccinating today with the health department. And then they ask exactly what you suggested. You know, how do I get mine? I think most people will have that conversation with their physician when it's their primary care physician, but because I'm mostly there to clean out earwax or look up people's noses for transient sort of encounters, it's not the kind of thing that's come up in my office a lot, but outside the office all the time.
You wrote an op-ed story for Bridge Michigan that posed this question: why is it that the state has not considered sending vaccine doses to primary care doctors? What's the case for that?
Yeah, I guess if I had to sort of explore the logic of somebody else in making that decision, I would say that it was probably at the beginning short supply, right? When they wanted to try to maximize the number of people that got a shot in their arm and could walk away at least with one dose, if not two, of being vaccinated, we were looking at doing it 1,000 people at a time. And, you know, that's pretty much what we've been doing in high school parking lots and in gymnasiums for the past couple of months with the health department. But it sort of left this void, especially when to try to get on a list like that literally was like Black Friday shopping. I mean, you had to sort of log on at the right time and get on the list and hope that somebody called you back. And eventually you got a call back or an email saying, okay, come to this high school parking lot at this time. But it was a scramble. And you can imagine how difficult that must be for somebody who is, you know, a senior citizen, you know, some tech savviness, but probably not Black Friday level tech savviness to navigate that. And that's who I think was being left behind in the current rollout. And that's kind of what prompted us to have this article written was, hey, you know, it's time to start thinking about those people that can't navigate all of the hurdles to get vaccinated in the way we've been doing it.
Why is it that primary care doctors might represent a better way of doing this?
You know, I think it's a added value. I don't necessarily think it should be instead. We should still do 1,000 people a day in a high school parking lot for those people that can navigate the system. But we shouldn't leave behind those people that can't get it that way, right? A senior member of our community that doesn't have children that can help them get on some list, because that's the kind of message that we were just talking about. Those are the requests that I get from children of seniors all day long, trying to figure out how to get on that list. They're helping them do that. But there's a lot of seniors that don't have that person in their family to make that happen. And that's why, but they certainly have access to their primary care physician, you know, somebody that they're seeing anyway to get their cholesterol medications adjusted or their diabetes managed. It's logical to make sure that when they go in for that appointment or call that person, that physician, their primary care physician, has vaccine sitting in their refrigerator ready to put into their arm.
How many Michiganders have a primary care doctor? Is it possible that if we did rely on primary care physicians, that there would be people who would be left out of the system because they don't have that relationship?
Yep. So that's absolutely true. And that, I mean, you and I can probably both think of at least a dozen people in our own friend circle that are probably under age 50 that are very healthy and don't have an engagement with their primary care physician. But that's also the same group of people that when they become eligible, probably won't have any issue navigating the, you know, sort of websites and the various places and logging onto this pharmacy site and that store site and this health department site. So yes, there are people that don't have a primary care physician, but that's probably also the people that are very tech savvy and can navigate the current way. But as far as seniors, you know, what are the odds that somebody that's on the other side of 70 doesn't have a primary care physician? Much, much lower. But, you know, if that is the case, then absolutely they might fall through the crack that still exists when both their primary care physician can vaccinate and the health department can vaccinate. But this person that isn't plugged into either might fall through the cracks. And those are the people that we just have to reach out to via the community to let them know that there is help. If you have a neighbor that's having trouble and you hear about it, you know, contact one of either a primary care physician. And I don't think it has to be a relationship with a primary care physician that pre-existed COVID, right? If Dr. Smith down the street from Mrs. Jones has vaccine in their refrigerator and Mrs. Jones says, hey, you know, I'm not one of your patients, but I understand that you have vaccine, I don't think it's going to be any trouble for her to get in there and get vaccinated.
We understand from talking to county health departments that the biggest drag on distribution right now, I mean, the distribution system itself certainly does pose some challenges, but that the biggest problem is really a lack of supply. The vaccine supplies are slowly increasing. But should we be concerned that adding primary care docs to the mix might water down a supply that's already on the scarce side?
Well, so, you know, just from my observations and the vaccines I've been doing through the health department, the initial, you know, so 3/4 of the dosing as of a month ago was going through the hospital systems to try to vaccinate healthcare workers first. And that, you know, that was logical. Now that the hospitals in my area have pretty much vaccinated anybody within their system that needed to be vaccinated or wanted to be vaccinated, I just looked at the numbers and it's getting much closer where the health department is getting more and more every week. And so it's not as scarce as it was just a month ago. But again, there are people that I think it's more than just where can we get the most number of people vaccinated. We should also consider who it is that's being included or excluded in that methodology. And that's why I think that the, you know, sending 20 vaccines to each primary care physician in the county, in addition to 1,000 vaccines to the health department in a high school parking lot, it can be both and. It doesn't have to be either or.
So we might consider this as a, it wouldn't have to necessarily be a lion's share to make a meaningful effect in who gets vaccinated.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it's not the lion's share of people that can't navigate it either, right? We just don't want anybody to be left out. And, you know, vaccinating 80% of the people over 70 that do have somebody to help them navigate and get on a list for a pharmacy or a health department, still leaves 20%, and we don't want to leave that 20%, especially that high risk 20%. And if their best way is to get it through their primary care physician, let's get them in there.
One of the things that I've noticed is that there have been stories circulating about people line jumping. That is to say, folks who aren't in priority groups getting moved up and getting vaccinations and getting vaccine doses, when in fact folks who are at greater risk have not received a dose yet. On a little closer examination, it seems like a number of those cases have resulted when hospitals and health departments ran out of eligible folks who were lined up for any given scheduled day. And they said, you know, we don't want this to go to waste, so we are going to make sure that somebody who wants a vaccination dose gets one. Is there any reason to think that that would not happen if doctors' offices were empowered to vaccinate for COVID?
No. So, I mean, I've witnessed that myself. Our local health department, when we vaccinate at the end of the day, if there's, you know, because a lot of the times these vials, which are meant for 5 doses out of each vial, you'll get a 6th dose out of them, or you combine what's left behind in 3 different vials to get a 6th dose. So at the end of the day, you will have, you know, less than 10 extra doses. And that's when the volunteers will get vaccinated. That's when they go down the list and say, well, you know, so-and-so wasn't going to come until tomorrow. Let's call him and see if we can get him in today because we have an extra dose here. So it's still very prudent, judicious use of that resource. And so what would happen in a doctor's office in that situation? I think the same thing, right? Because it's still going to be fine in the refrigerator. It's not like it has to be something that's used today, because there's this 30-day shelf life for the Moderna one, for example. And so if you got through the 5 or 6 that you were going to do today, and 2 didn't show up, so you've got an extra 2 doses, then there's no problem. I don't think that it would be any issue to call the people that are on your list for tomorrow or next week and say, hey, you know, we've got these extra 2 doses. Do you want to come in today? I don't think it's going to be an issue at all to fill those spots, just like it isn't an issue for the health department to fill those spots.
Dr. Bobby Mokamala is president of Michigan State's Medical Society. He's also a practicing otolaryngologist in Flint. Dr. Mokamala, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for the conversation.
Coming up, the family that podcasts together stays together. We meet the Jasons, who've found a creative outlet in podcasting during the pandemic. This includes 10-year-old Josiah Jason, who's using the medium to read to other kids.
You know, he's picking up things that he's going to be able to use for the rest of his life. He's to the point now where he knows how to edit in Audacity and can really produce his own segments and do almost everything on his own.
That's after a short break. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. You may not be surprised to learn that we here are big fans of the podcast medium. When something new and interesting pops up, it's like binging anything great during a global pandemic. We just want to hear more. That has been the case with the podcast Read Books with Josiah.
Hi there, and welcome to Read Books with Josiah. Today I'll be talking about the book Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky by Kwame Mbalia. It won the Coretta Scott King Award, and New York Times named it in the top 25 children's books of 2019. It is a book about West African mythology and a boy, Tristan, who stumbles upon its world. Tristan is sad about losing his best friend, and his parents send him to spend the summer on his grandparents' farm. While he is there, a little doll, Gum Baby, steals his best friend's notebook.
The host of the show is Josiah Jason, a 5th grader in Ypsilanti, and he joins us today along with his parents, Keith and Javon. Josiah, Keith, Javon, welcome to Stateside, all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Josiah, could you tell us about what got you thinking about reading to other kids and interested in trying to do something like this?
Well, actually, me and my brother, like a few years ago, we had our podcast that we did together, but then we kind of like stopped doing it. And then
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what was that one about?
We would just talk about like sports and video games and things like that.
Nice. And,
yeah, so then I wanted to start up that podcast again, but my brother didn't want to. So I had to think of a podcast like that I could do on my own. And then my mom came up with the idea of like a reading podcast. And that's how I like started this podcast, kind of.
Yeah. Well, Keith, I know that you have a little bit of background in audio. Aren't you the announcer for the University of Michigan soccer?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Do you have other audio experience too?
So I started before the boys a podcast called Fatherhood Rocks, which was all conversations with other men that I know about their experiences in fatherhood. So I got a lot of experience with the podcasting front doing that. And then even going back further, I had the opportunity to run audio at Burning Bush Church here in Ypsilanti for about 6 or 7 years. So I learned a lot about mixing and producing live events.
It sure helps when you're trying to teach kids how to do something to have a real handle on it yourself. That sounds like it was pretty important to all this getting off the ground.
Absolutely. And he's picking up things that he's going to be able to use for the rest of his life. So the first few, I handled everything at the computer and at the board. He's to the point now where he knows how to edit in Audacity and can really produce his own segments and do almost everything on his own.
That is awesome, Josiah. Siobhan, Josiah said that you were the one who came up with the idea of the reading podcast. Why did that occur to you?
Well, Josiah has always loved books. I mean, he just, the older he gets, he just devours them. Like he can read a 500-page book in like 3 days. And I'm also an educator, so of course I push reading. I know how important it is. So I just thought that, it would be great for him to put his love of reading with a podcast and inspire other kids to do the same.
It sounds like a natural. There's a lot of great book podcasts out there. Josiah, had you listened? Do you listen to many podcasts either by yourself or with your brother or with your family?
Well, I don't really listen to that many podcasts, no.
Well, you've listened to a few over the
Yeah.
years, so like WoW in the World and the Science One
Yeah.
and all those other things.
To a few, but not really that much.
Will you tell us a little bit about the setup that you have at home for doing this?
Well, we have a microphone that my dad uses for like work and other things like that. And then we have a Rodecaster Pro that we use to record. We can do special like sound effects with it too. And
Yeah.
Audacity.
we also use Audacity to edit the podcast.
Yes. That's a good choice. You talked about trying to figure out how to do a script. How much of your podcast that you do now, how much of that is scripted? Do you type out all the words or write out all the words, or do you just try to maybe get some thoughts together and just talk?
Well, I usually like write out what I'm gonna say, then just read it like aloud while I'm recording.
Is it something that comes very natural to you?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to just, read it aloud because I do like reading aloud sometimes.
We've heard plenty of stories lately about the boredom of everybody being at home breeding some creativity. Javon, could you maybe tell us a little bit about how you've found some ways as parents to try to encourage creativity among your kids during the pandemic?
Yeah, I just have really tried to encourage them to, keep doing the things that really we were doing before. I try to keep our days as normal as possible. So I encourage them to do things like they have to go outside every day. They don't always like that, but I know how important that is, to be out in the fresh air and get sunshine. We also build in time every day where they have to do things like reading. I make sure that they participate in their extracurricular activities with school. We've also looked for, a lot of things have moved online now. So, like they are a part of the book club with the Ypsilanti District Library. They're not meeting in person anymore, but our kids have joined that virtually. So just continuing to go with what their interests are and look for things that we can do at home to continue to foster them.
Right. I hesitate to ask, but Keith and Javon, have you been able to do anything creative yourself, or do you consider the boys' work as maybe your creative outlet right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to do some creative things throughout the pandemic. One of the things that I realized pretty quickly was that being an extrovert, being stuck in the house all day, I needed to find some sort of outlet. So last summer, we did a storytelling series on Facebook called Saturday Night Stories, where we would pick a theme and kind of do like a moth type thing where we would pick, you know, 5-6 people and just have them share a story over a live stream. And that was very helpful for me because it allowed me to reconnect with people. The other thing that I found to be very helpful is just, I never thought I would be a gamer, but picking up Call of Duty and being able to play with my cousins online has been a way to help with all of that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people feel like the podcasts and for that matter, the gaming world, the gaming podcasts have sort of taken people's time away from real world activities, but there really is a chance for connection there. Hey, Josiah, can I swing back around to you? Could you tell us about some of the books that you've done with the podcast?
Well, so far, I've done the book Home of the Brave, and then the next episode coming out is going to be about Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky. And then there are some other books that we're going to do, like we're going to do maybe about Percy Jackson, Bad Guy series, and... Mm-hmm. Like a book called A Long Walk to Water.
How do you decide what might be a good book to use for the podcast?
Well, usually think about like first, like what I thought of it, like how, like if I thought it was a good book or not. And then I think about like what's like important in the book. And like kind of like the moral of it.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you're reading for fun right now that you haven't really used in the podcast, but might be a favorite or a favorite series?
Well, like with our book club that we do, like we like the books that we do, and with the Ypsilanti District Library, yeah, book club. I like read those books for fun.
Yeah. Keith, Javon, can you fill us in a little bit on Josiah's reading habits over time? Maybe stuff that he's really gotten into?
Of course. You know, one of the things that he really has loved and gravitated toward has been Greek mythology and history in Greece. And if you get him going, he can talk about that for a very long time. He is, like I said, a big fan of the Percy Jackson series. And it was really big for him the other day when the article came out in MLive about his podcast. And the Riordan family, who, of course, Rick wrote the Percy Jackson series, tweeted about him and nominated him as Demigod of the Week. And so to watch him be able to grow into that interest and then run around the house in excitement, seeing that the family that helped put that book out there knows who he is and they shouted him out on Twitter. Was really exciting for him.
That's awesome. Josiah, do your teachers and your classmates know that you've been working on this?
Yeah, we actually like listened to my first episode and the intro like when they came out.
Oh man.
So that was cool.
Yeah. What did everybody say about it?
They like all thought that it was really cool.
You had some friends who asked you if you're famous now, right?
is anybody trying to get on your podcast now, asking if they can join in?
Well, not really. No.
They haven't asked that. Okay.
You did your first podcast. You had two of your friends on with you, right? And your
yeah,
brother.
I did have two of my friends and my brother on here.
And so one of the things that we're trying to do with the podcast is also give people the opportunity to call in and share messages about what they thought about upcoming books. So yeah, we're encouraging folks to call in, especially with us wrapping up the Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky book, we want to try to get as many people to call in and share their thoughts on the book as well.
I'm pretty sure the number is 734-796-7683.
Now that is a good memory. Josiah, what has school actually been like for you this year?
It's really different because, we have less classes. We only have, one or two classes, with the teacher. And all our other work is, a work on, a Google Doc or something like that. And I also have, don't have a lot of time to, talk with your friends. Because when you do, get in a class with them, you can't really, talk because most of the time the teacher is talking.
That's my daughter's biggest complaint. She feels like she gets to say 3 sentences a day and that's it. Are there things that you've missed most?
Yeah, I, miss being able to be with my friends and, play with them at recess and stuff like that.
And the theater stuff too, right?
Oh, yeah. And our school, we did a musical every school year. And it actually got canceled, the one that I was in.
Oh, no. What was the show?
It was Frozen.
Did you already have a part that you'd been cast for?
Well, I was one of the ensemble.
Oh. Well, I feel like there are going to be so many school plays. Every school is going to be doing all the activities once everybody finally gets back and can take off masks. This has been such a weird year for so many kids and so many families. And we've been talking as a team about what has changed and how we put together things for people to listen to. As stuff returns to normal, I guess, Josiah, let me ask you first, is this something you could see yourself continuing to do, even if the pandemic comes to an end?
Well, yeah, I can see myself still doing it. But we might have less time to do it because we're focusing on school and homework and stuff like that. But yeah, I can still see myself doing it.
Yeah. Let me ask your folks, Keith and Javon, are there things that as a family you hope might have changed going forward, maybe for the better? Like Josiah and his brother getting into podcasting or other things that you've been able to do together?
Yeah, definitely. It was really, a big wake-up call once we had to stay home. Because you just, when you're out and about every day, you don't realize how busy your life has actually gotten. So when we were, forced to just kind of stay home and be with each other, it just really kind of opened our eyes to how busy we actually were before, and just helped us to kind of plan and make more time for our family and not do so much running around and activities. So that's definitely something I want to keep moving forward, even as the pandemic comes to an end and more things open up. I just really want to be intentional about the time that our family has together and how much we put on our schedule.
I think there are a lot of people feeling that right now. Do you have any advice for parents who might want to, if they have kids who are curious about this, about how to get started?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that people can do is just spend some time on YouTube looking at how they produce podcasts. And there are so many different channels out there that teach people how to edit, what equipment is out there. You can go down a rabbit hole comparing microphone X to microphone Y for 3 or 4 hours if you're not careful. I've done it several times. I'm ashamed to admit that, but I have. But it's also helped me to pick the microphones that we're using for the podcast. And so spending time on YouTube doing that. And the other thing that you'll find is that people are amazingly open to responding to inquiries about things. So I have on several occasions sent emails to the people who produce the podcasts or host the podcast that I listen to and asked for their advice on things or shared some feedback on something. And they've responded and said, thank you. Or here's the information that you're looking for. And so I think going that extra step and reaching out to the people who you really admire is something that's very important to do as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Keith, Javon, Josiah, I want to thank you all very, very much for talking to us about this. And Josiah, good luck. I hope there's some more podcasts in your future, either this one or whatever you're interested in next.
Thank you.
Next up, a psychologist who works with kids and parents tells us what she's seeing as kids gradually find their way back to classrooms.
Kids need a little bit of time alone as well as time with other people. Parents need some time alone as well as some quality time together as well. And I think that alone space has been harder to get. And I think that is part of the wear that people are experiencing.
That's after a short break. We'll be right back. You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've reached the week that Michigan schools were asked to aim for when Governor Gretchen Whitmer called for a return for some face-to-face learning.
Today, my administration is announcing a goal that all school districts offer an option for in-person learning no later than March 1st and earlier if possible. The value of in-person learning for our kids is immeasurable.
Whether kids in your community are back in a classroom or not, the pandemic has had some serious mental health consequences. There's the strain and uncertainty at home, limited contact with friends, the loss of school routines. It all takes a toll. That's especially true for those who are already in more vulnerable situations. What can parents and other adults do to help their children live with the uncertainty of this pandemic? Erin Hunter is interim director of the University Center for the Child and Family at the University of Michigan. Erin, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me back.
We spoke to you a bit earlier in the pandemic, and I was just wondering if we could start by talking about the kids that you work with, what kinds of things they're saying right now, what kinds of things you find them dealing with.
The crazy thing about this past year is that so much has changed and yet nothing has seemed to change as much. And I think that that's true in all things, including what I'm hearing kind of from my clients as well as in my own life. What we've been seeing, especially over the last year, is a lot more, I think, just in general, anxiety and stress across all family members, including kids in all ages. Of course, kids at different ages are going to show that stress in different ways. So for some, it might be a little bit more behavioral, where they might be kind of throwing things or getting in more fights with their siblings or talking back to parents more, or refusing to do assignments, refusing to log on to Zoom, perhaps. Whereas in others, it might be kind of, you know, more crying or kind of more worrying, wanting to check in, wanting to be closer to parents. But I think just across the board, just like there's been high levels of stress and anxiety. And I think just some, you know, ongoing sadness and some depressed mood that is creeping in too, just as people start to feel a little bit hopeless, although there's been silver linings as well. But it's a long slog.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point and sometimes hard to remember in the moment that like, a third grader is not necessarily going to come at you with, I'm feeling really insecure and frightened right now. they're going to manifest in different ways.
If only that would make parenting so much easier. But I mean, even I feel like myself, even as an adult and as a therapist, sometimes I'm just cranky and I'm being maybe more irritable with other people. And then I'm just like, oh, I'm stressed out right now. Yeah, but again, in younger kids, it's much less likely that they're going to have that kind of emotional awareness or insight to be able to directly express. So instead, they're just going to maybe huff off and slam their door.
You mentioned friends, and I know that there's so many kids out there who are really missing their friend groups. What do you observe it's been like for parents to try to fill that gap right now?
I just think it's been really hard. I think parents are feeling a whole range of emotions. Sadness. I see guilt in parents. Like, parents are feeling that they're supposed to be able to make it up to their kids or kind of cover that space, when the thing is that, you know, you can do things to engage with your kid, but you're not going to be another kid that their age, that they're engaging within the same level. You know, with what families are talking about, they're doing the best that they can, either by Zooming, trying to do some Zoom kind of social time with kids. I see a lot of parents being very creative about trying to find outdoor things, even in the winter. I think actually getting some snow is great, because then I heard many more people talking about being able to sled. So I do think that some of the snow and even a change in scenery with that and being able to do some sledding, of course, as the spring comes, which is nice to get more sunshine, but it is then muddy and mucky and not as easy to just be easily outside and playing with friends as it is in the summer or even in the winter when you can sled.
How would you describe the way that all the stress is impacting family dynamics?
I think that basically what's been happening is that families have been put in kind of a pressure cooker, because all of the things are happening in the context of the family, you know, like school, work, social interactions, all of the emotions, and it's hard to get a break from one another. Family dynamics are always complex, because there's many different kind of roles that people and families have together. And I think that with the pressure that the pandemic has been putting on, it just, you know, it's like the good times are even better, but then the hard times are harder. And if there's already some conflict, I think just people are much more likely to erupt at members in their family. So I do think that there's been more conflict, and just even it's harder to get space from one another. Even with younger kids, that, you know, now I have my because I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old boy, and they share a room right now. And for the first time ever, my 9-year-old's talking about how he wants his own room. And I think it's just because he feels like he doesn't have space. And I think that's what I'm hearing from a lot of clients as well. Just like, it's hard to find space when we've been together for going on a year now.
No kidding. I've heard a certain name ascribed to some of this, pod fatigue. And some people say that in terms of the friend group that you've committed to sticking with. But I'm sure that's true within families as well.
There's pod fatigue and family fatigue. Yes.
Okay, so we're here. We're in the same living spaces that we always were. What kinds of things do you say to people who do need, like, some way to get away from each other when they can't really get away from each other?
Well, and this is where I think trying to get a little bit creative and go with what works, and it's going to be different for every person. So I think it's important to tailor it to the family. You know, houses are different, people are different. But I think, where can you take space where you're able to? And if it is that maybe, you know, there's a space where there's really not a ton of room, where can you create a little bit cubby, maybe even putting up a sheet or a blanket in a corner to make a little bit of a space, and the kid might be able to go in there with some headphones and listen to music of their liking or listen to an audiobook, but being able to get a little bit of a respite from the rest of the family in that space. Even at my house, what we did over the weekend, we took one of our closets and we moved things out of the closet to create it into a little bit of a take space place for my kids, for when they need a space from one another. You know, and I think that as it gets warmer, like, if you can go outside, is there a space that you can go outside? But I think talking with parents and other family members too, just about how important it is for everyone to be able to have some time alone. Kids need a little bit of time alone as well as time with other people. Parents need some time alone as well as some quality time together as well. And I think that alone space has been harder to get. And I think that is part of the wear that people are experiencing.
I don't think I have ever been so aware of the important qualities of a pillow fort.
Yes. Oh, I love forts. We encourage forts at our house.
Can we talk a little bit about what's going on with older kids right now, too? I mean, obviously, socialization is super important for little ones, but middle school and high school is a time when kids are working to develop their identity beyond the family unit. And as you say, here we are, we can't get away from our families. How do you see that? Are there things you see that doing to older kids?
In some ways, I feel the most for them. And I think even young adults, college students right now, because I think that is a time where, again, they're engaging in identity development, but part of that identity development is exploration and exposing yourself to a broader array of things in the world and a broader way of people, and that there just aren't the same level of opportunities for that now as there have been in the past. And I do think that that is wearing a lot. I think the other thing is during those years, you become very aware of your peers and kind of what they're doing. And it's very natural during those years to, I think, do a little bit of comparison. What are they doing? What does that mean about me and who I am? And there tend to be some anxieties that, you know, that are kind of normative that go along with that. And one of the things that I'm seeing that I think is really hard is almost that anxiety is exacerbated because you're not getting as much information as you normally would. Preteens, teens are craving that socialization, but then also feeling much more awkward and anxious when they are having that time. And even over Zoom, I'm seeing just like, you know, preteens, teens being much more anxious about being on screen, seeing them on screen, how to do it. And honestly, I get it because I do think that our social norms are changing. And even when you see one of this with masks, you can't go up and give them a hug or, you know, that it, our social norms are changing. And for those preteens and teens where the social world is so very important, I think it wears on them even more than it does on adults and younger kids.
It occurs to me that a lot of young people are, you know, have grown up very aware of appearance, you know, looking at other people on social media and sort of thinking about how they look, which is not a thing for every kid. But that's got to be doing a number on kids who are interacting with their friends entirely on screens right now.
Well, and that's where you're going to get the most exposure to the most range of people is kind of through social media. And so, again, I think that that is going to be hard. And I think that, you know, kids also know that that is not necessarily the whole story, but then they don't have more of the whole story to go by. The other thing in the social world that I've heard kind of parents be concerned about, too, is even gaming, and because gaming is a way to stay connected with friends right now, where you might be able to go online and play a game together, which is actually a great way to kind of stay connected. But then I also hear parents being concerned about their kids being on gaming or on their computers like all the time, either on social media or on gaming. And I do think it's just we're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because that is a way to get that, and that it has some downsides. And I think for me, like, we're in this situation now. And I think one thing is, how are we going to help ourselves adjust out of it? So that when we are able to have more socialization, as school starts to move back into hybrid or full-time. And I think that I have some ideas, but I think that it's something that we're all going to be going through an adjustment period as we transition back into more live interactions. That is also going to be, it's going to be wonderful and also challenging.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Erin Hunter, Interim Director of the University Center for the Child and Family at the University of Michigan. Well, let's talk about that a bit. Like you say, plenty of kids are already back at least a couple days a week, and some are just transitioning back. How do you prepare a kid for limited interaction with their friends that they've been missing so much?
I think that one thing is just talking to them about it and seeing what questions they have too. I think one thing that adults tend to do with kids is that they tend to use a whole lot of words. And I think that with kids, it's also good to just kind of think about what is the like one or two liner that you want to, like the take home message that you really want to give to them, and then opening it up for them to have questions or see what they're going to do with that. Sometimes just like in the, like the Snoopy, the Peanuts movies, like when the adults are talking and it just goes, wah, 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 wah. I think that the more adults talk to kids, the more it moves into just that wah, wah, and the kids aren't hearing anything.
Yes.
So I think when thinking about preparing for some of that, just saying that, you know, okay, so, you know, you're going to be going back into school, or you're going to go to school 5 days a week instead of 2 days a week, and that, you know, you're still going to have to keep wearing the masks and keeping social distance. I wonder how you're feeling about that or what you think about that. I'm often, even doing my job for as long as I've been doing it, I'm always surprised by how much kids are aware of, how much they already know, and how much they've actually thought about it more. And when we give them space, then we can also, again, not just tell them what to do, but give them space to figure out what to do for themselves.
Yeah. What else is on your mind as kids are maybe heading back into the classroom for the first time?
you know, one of the things, like kind of this adjustment that I was talking about, that I do think that it is going to be adjustment period. And I think that some parents and even some kids are probably thinking, like, I just have to get back into school and then things will be okay. And I do think that it you know, not that it won't be okay, but it's going to be different. And there might be some more anxiety coming up in the kids, parents, teachers, the whole school system, as we kind of get into that adjustment. And I think, you know, even when we talked before, I think we talked about kind of lowering expectations. And I think coming back to that a little bit is like setting up parents and kids and hopefully teachers as well for realistic expectations. I am imagining there's going to be a few more behavioral issues or even like some social difficulties as kids navigate the situation. And I don't think that that's bad. I think it's just a resettling into the space. And I'm hoping that kids and families and teachers are kind of prepared for that. And I think just kind of like letting people be a little bit distressed as we move into it and just making space to talk about it as it needs to be talked about. And I think the other thing is creating space for kids to talk doesn't mean that they're actually going to say anything. It's kind of just opening the door and letting the kid decide if they're going to come in. But if they know that there's an open door, it's much better than someone pushing them through. So not forcing the issue, but really just making that space.
You know, we've all been together for so long, and now kids are leaving the house. That might be the first time in a while, and it might not entirely be okay with them. Is there anything we can do about that?
You know, as kids move back into school, especially if they're going back into school for the first time in a year, one of the things that I've been thinking about and trying to talk to families about is, you know, parents might want to give them something of theirs so that, you know, just saying that, like, you know, I put some extra love into this and you can have it. And if you're feeling a little bit unsure or worried or sad or missing me, then you've got a hold of this and you know that it's going to remind, you know, so I'm still with you even when we're a little bit apart. And then we're going to come back together tonight. So in my family, I purchased these little like wristband things so that everyone in our family has it. And I've been talking about how like this connects us. And then we're always connected because everyone in our family is wearing this wristband. And I think it might just be something that could help kids, especially those ones that have not been in school yet. Because that's where I would expect some potential like separation anxiety coming up, especially for younger kids, but maybe for older kids too, as we do this. So just having something to say, like, we're still connected, even though we're not together.
Erin, are there some opportunities here to build resiliency as we start to think about our kids moving back in to social spaces with other people?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we have been, I mean, this has been really hard times, but I think it's been building resiliency as well. You know, these are going to be times that we talk about, you know, I imagine like when I'm a grandparent someday, if I'm, you know, if my kids decide to have kids, then this is something we're going to be talking about. You know, back in the pandemic, this is what happened. And kids are going to go on to face really challenging things in their life because life has its joys and it always has its challenges as well. And this is something that was thrown at us that, it, you know, we couldn't really be prepared for while we're doing it. And my hope, too, is that kids and kind of parents, families are saying, look what we've made it through. And a year ago, I never would have imagined if you would have said, you know, this is going to go on a year and then it's going to actually your family is going to adjust into it and it's going to be OK. I would have been like, no, I think we will lose our minds. I think I will actually lose my mind and I don't know what I won't be able to be a functioning parent. And I'm at least a mostly functioning parent most of the time, you know, and I do think that it's this, like what we've already been through even is a testament to how we can do hard things. And hopefully they won't have to be this hard in the future. But this is a space for us to kind of learn and grow and kind of take away what we can do. It's easy to focus on the stressors and the negatives. But there's always that other side as well. Because if you're going through a hard thing, there's some resiliency you've gained from it at the same time.
Erin Hunter is the interim director at the University Center for the Child and Family at the University of Michigan. Hey, Erin, it's great to talk to you. Hope you're doing okay.
Thank you. You too.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.